WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.
Hi everyone, welcome at WaveAct. Today with Liam Darmody, who is growth marketer, brand marketer and LinkedIn strategist. And today we will talk about how to scale go-to-market strategies. I'm super hyped to have you here. Thanks, mate, for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it. I've been a fan of the conversations that you've been putting out for some time now. We've been connected for a while, and it's great to finally meet face-to-face or digitally face-to-face and have a conversation.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, again, thank you for taking the time. And I would love to give you the opportunity to tell us a little bit more about your, I don't know, your life, your job, whatever you're passionate about.
Sure.
And yeah, or maybe, yeah.
So
yeah.
First and foremost, I'm a family man. I have a fantastic wife that I've been married to for almost 10 years now. We've been together for 14. We have two kids, three and just coming up on six. Professionally, I've sort of been a jack of all trades most of my career, master of none. I am very passionate about people and products and process. That love of those three things has kind of just evolved into me being a bit of a problem solver. So I'll go work at a startup and or a tech company, and they're looking to build something new, or there's a larger company that's looking to build something new from within, and I'll go into that company and start working on building that, right? I really believe that the older I get, the more I believe that if you just follow your fascination, you will manifest your own serendipity, right? That's kind of my like line that I say to people, because I talk to a lot of people who are always really nervous about, well, what should we do? How do we do it? Where do we get there? And I always say, if you just follow what you're passionate about, follow your fascination, like 9 times out of 10, you can't go wrong with that approach, because you'll love what you're doing and you'll get in, you'll attract people that are interested in doing the things that you like doing. And then all of a sudden you've got collaborations and amazing things happen from there. So, very much a believer in that. I started in recruiting, out of college. I worked at a staffing firm, and then I went to work at a technology startup, that stopped hiring basically immediately after I joined the company. And rather than, you know, sit around and wait for hiring to start again, I was like, look, like we're in the middle of launching something new. Like, where can I help? And so they threw me in a couple projects. I taught myself HTML. I built a CMS system, like went and worked on the product team for a while, the project team for a while. And we launched this big portal, and it was just amazing, right? That was my first experience at a startup. I got the bug at that point, and have been building things, whether at a small company or at a larger company, but building something from the ground up is what I'm kind of addicted to. I eventually evolved into more of like a sales operations, revenue operations, product operations kind of professional, where I was basically helping teams scale, right? Like, how do we build a stand-up a sales organization in outbound sales, inbound sales, marketing, make sure that, you know, the marketing funnel is full of leads for those folks. Analyzing the performance of salespeople, and then also right through to customer success, right? Like the revenue operations role that has evolved is now, it's not just sales ops, it's not marketing ops, it's all of it, right? Anything relating to revenue process is something that falls within revenue operations, and that's the passion of mine. And then now I'm actually working in employer brand marketing for a digital consultancy, which again, sort of that follow your fascination theme, right? The chief marketing officer of my company saw what I was posting on LinkedIn, saw my background, and was interested in having me come in. And basically, they had this new role that they were building to try and start up a new function internally. And we talked about it, and he was like, I don't have a job description for you or anything. And I was like, cool, no worries, I'm good. And so I just jumped in and have been having a ton of fun ever since.
Those are the best roles, where you just jump into the intercomplete, also maybe a new subject or just something different, right?
I've always, as much as I'm an operations mind and an operations person, I love marketing and I love marketing messaging. I love branding. So that's kind of the passion for me. Like operations is what I'm really good at, but then, you know, marketing is also something I'm really passionate about. And so the opportunity to jump in and start doing that was really exciting for me, and I'm having a blast.
Awesome. Yeah, you said a couple of very interesting things now, and I want to go back to the question that you are being asked all the time, as it seems, and that's, how do you actually get into that, right? I know you said a couple of different professions now, mm-hmm. and one can't do all at the same time, but basically, what kind of, let's say, key takeaway looking back would you say to someone who is just getting started? Let's say, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, so just getting started, it's having an open mind and being willing to do anything. Because when you're just getting started, you've got this clean slate that you can fill with knowledge and fill with learnings and information. And, you know, you're not necessarily sure what you want to do yet. You're not necessarily sure what you're going to be doing 20 years from now. And there's not really a good way to find out. I mean, you can take personality tests and all sorts of different stuff, but really just going with the flow and being able to try new things, do new things, like not be afraid of failing, not be afraid of taking on new challenges that you've never done before. I think a lot of people sometimes get hung up on the fact that they're like, well, I don't know how to do that. It's like, okay, learn, right? Like a lot of people, most people who learned how to do anything didn't know how to do it at some point in time, right? So have an open mind, have a growth mindset, find a project or something that you're excited about, and just don't worry too much about, is this the right thing for me, right? Everybody overthinks. They're like, is this my career? Is this what I'm meant to do? Don't worry about it. Just focus on, are you having fun doing it right now? And if the answer to that question is yes, just keep going. And if you start to have less fun and the amount of fun that you're having outweighs and counterbalances the negativity, is outweigh, it's the, if you have less fun than you have fun, then you start thinking, okay, maybe it's time to find something else, right? On a consistent basis. The other thing I would say is you have to be adaptable, right? So like building a startup from scratch is hard. 90% of them fail for a reason, right? And so you have to be able to go into it and say, okay, we just put all that work in and we just proved that that doesn't work. We got to scrap it and go back to the drawing board and figure out the next approach, right? And if you are the type of person that is frustrated by that, frustrated, fine. But like, if you're the type of person who can't handle that, like you're like, I just can't do that, then startups are not for you, period. Like, full stop. But you, if you are somebody who's like, okay, we tried it, we put it out there, it didn't work, on to the next thing. How do we figure out the next problem? Then that's the kind of mindset that you have. So those are some of the things that I would say, if you're interested in working in startup companies, and obviously Web3 is a startup industry. It's moving quickly, it's moving fast. There are more unknowns than there are knowns, and you have to be okay with that. And I think that's the third piece I would say. I've always been pretty comfortable with ambiguity. Like I said, my current role, you know, there wasn't a job description drafted when I agreed to take it, and I'm okay with that because it sounded like something really awesome, and that is very much something that you need to be able to do. Like, you have to be able to say, okay, well, there's no clearly defined role for me. There's no, like, I don't know what necessarily I have to do next. I'm just gonna go with the flow, and that is essential if you're going to be successful at building a company from the ground up.
Absolutely. Especially when you said changing your mind, right, which I consider a key strength indicator, maybe of founders in general. So that's definitely a big thing in my humble opinion. But one thing that I discovered for myself, and I'm curious on your opinion on that, is you need to be flexible in your approach, right? Mm-hmm. But there are some things which I believe shouldn't be changed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, that's, I think that is the challenge of building something from scratch. It's like figuring out what those things are, right? What can move and what can't. And I think if you're starting a business, you have to be crystal clear on, you know, you have to be crystal clear on what it is that you're trying to accomplish, what problem you're trying to solve. You have to have a really good understanding of how to explain that, right? Especially in Web3, because in Web3, it's not as broadly understood. And so the problems that you're solving, you probably understand what they are, but does the client or the lead that you're trying to go after really understand what it is? And so you have to have a meticulous ability to communicate what the problem you're solving is. And you have to sort of be very driven and understand, this is my vision, this is my focus. For the next year, this is what we're going towards, and this is how we're gonna get there. Everything else, like, is on the periphery, right? You just want to make sure that everything is front and center and you're all focused on that one specific mission and objective. And you don't really stray from it. And then that, again, that narrative, like, what are we trying to do here and why is it valuable? You have to be crystal clear on that value proposition and not waver from it if you can avoid it.
Yeah, absolutely. Especially in, as I said, tech related industries, Web3 and so on. People oftentimes get hung up on their solution that they're building, which they think makes sense, right?
Right, yes.
And yeah, oftentimes, in my humble opinion, it should be validated much more, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the, you know, when you sent over some of the questions that you sent over earlier, it was great that you sent those across because that actually had me sort of really thinking about it. And, you know, one of the things that you have to make sure that you're doing is measuring and understanding your audience, listening to your audience, listening to the things that you're doing and seeing, like, is this working the way I expected it to work? And if the answer is no, you don't just ignore it and say, well, we're going to keep going forward. Like, it's like, well, wait, why isn't it working? Right? Like, always be thinking about, is this the right approach? Should we be tweaking things here and there? There's a lot of examples of companies that failed because their founders were dead set on doing things the way they thought they should be done, and the market was telling them something else, right? The market was saying, that's not what we want. You have to be really focused on that.
Yeah, absolutely. I even think that's less of kind of a personality trait. It's something that's more related to experience. What do you think? Because
yeah, I think you certainly get a lot more focused on listening and understanding and adapting to what you're processing, the more experience you get under your belt, right? When you're earlier in your career, you're even if you're highly analytical, you just don't have as much of a frame of reference. So you don't have as much experience to compare what you're going through with. Whereas for me, like, I have 20 years of experience where I can say, okay, this reminds me of that time that I did this and this and this. And okay, how did I handle that situation? Like, you can, and you have a little bit more confidence because you've done this before, right? And that's the wisdom that comes with having built things. But again, Web3 is brand new, right? So there's a lot of disruption that will happen to the traditional way of doing things, I think.
You also just talked about confidence. When I look at many Web3 companies or startups, and also look at my own first startup that I had, I would even say, also myself have been very overly confident about, you know, which might be a lack of market validation, right? But also, as you said, a missing frame of experience, reference, right? But I guess that's an interesting point, right? When it comes to confidence, is that, you know, as you're building startups, as I understood it on a regular basis, or at least support companies doing that, or startup-like environments. What kind of characteristics in a founder did you experience for yourself have the right mindset to build something from the ground up? I think that could be interesting.
Yeah, I mean, it's conviction, right? Like, you have to be so passionate about the company that you're building and the problem that you're trying to solve. And it has to be unwavering confidence and conviction, right? Because you're going to get way more no's than you are yeses, right? And there's going to be an intense competition. There's going to be a lot of challenges. And, you know, I've never been a founder myself, and I think part of the reason that I've never, like, I view myself more as kind of an operator that helps the founder figure out how to get things done. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that if you're going to be the founder of a business, you're the chief sales person, right? You're the chief marketing person. You are, you know, the visionary who's setting the path and the strategy for the company. And you're the one that ultimately has to take the responsibility of the success of the company on your shoulders. And everybody that's in that company that's working their ass off for you, like, they're looking to you for strength and confidence and confirmation that, you know, what they're doing to help build is actually a good move for them, right? So you have to be very, very, very passionate. And in all of the founders that I've ever worked with have that, right? They are incredibly passionate. Like, you could tell them that their idea is horrendous and they will tell you 25 different ways that it's not. And by the time you finish talking about it, you're like, maybe it's not that horrendous. You know, like, that you just, they can sell their concept to anybody. And then I think, you know, that other part of it is the most successful founders are the ones that can kind of say, okay, this is my hypothesis. This is how we're going to test it. Did it work? Yes or no? Why not? Okay. What are we going to do next to figure out our next play? And the best founders are the ones that are willing to put their ego aside and say, I'm bullish on this business idea. I'm bullish on this concept. We tried a couple things that didn't work. We're going to put those in the past and move on to the next thing. The founders that I think fail are the ones that are like, no, the customer doesn't get it. The client doesn't get it. It's like, no, it's on you as the founder of the business to make sure that your go-to-market strategy conveys the value of your business. And if you can't do that effectively, you're not going to be a successful founder. I think that's pretty key.
Absolutely. I think it was with you, right? When we talked about Gary Vee. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Gary Vee.
Yeah. Accountability, basically, it's that, right? Yes. Take accountability for your probably sometimes bad decisions, right?
Yeah. So and I think the other thing is, like, the thing that I love about Gary Vee and the things that he mentions are like the accountability component, but also the empathy, right? Like it's okay to be accountable. You should be accountable for the decisions that you make, but you should also have some self-compassion, right? You're a human being still. You make mistakes, and that's okay. I think a lot of the challenge that founders sometimes run into is this idea that, like, you're infallible and you can't make mistakes. And that's just not the case, right? You have to be okay making mistakes. Failure is more common than anything in startups. And so you're trying new things that just comes with the territory. So if you say, you know, yeah, we made a mistake and that's going to happen, that's fine. Like, that's a good message to say and to hear, and your employees need to hear you saying it, you know? So I'm all about that messaging.
Absolutely. I remember reading his book when he said, talking about a former employee who's, I think it was, he stole or she stole wine from him, right?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And I'm not 100% clear anymore about the story. It's a while ago. But basically, he was really hurt emotionally, obviously.
Yeah.
Right? It's a trust is broken and everything. But in the end, when he talked with him, I think it was him, then it was for really, really reasonable reasons. I think he was just in really deep financial struggles and all that kind of stuff. And that changes things, right?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, it's being empathetic and understanding people's situations. I think that's probably another thing that I didn't think about prior to this, but you have to care about your team and you have to understand where they're at. And I think a lot of founders sometimes are like, we're just going to work. Like, we have a mission. We have to accomplish it. And it's like, no. They're people too, right? You have to understand their specific situation, their scenarios, understand what motivates them. I mean, that's what true leadership is. You know, you don't manage any one person the same way. You sort of tailor your leadership strategy to a specific person because you understand what motivates them and what drives them and how they react to, you know, to instruction or just ideas, et cetera. I think that's a great point. Understanding where they were at and why, what motivated them. It doesn't make them a bad person. They were just in really crappy situations and circumstances. And sometimes people make unwise decisions when that's the case, right?
Yeah, absolutely. That also gets me back to the, let's say you work for your employees, right? And
yeah, totally.
And also with the notion of don't expect them to work as hard as you do. That flipped a yep. switch in me. But yep. yeah. Basically, as you said, with looking at all these startups and environments that you have gone through in your career, basically, are there, because that's a point that I think is really interesting in general, because let's put it that way, when you're scaling a startup, right, you're growing, you have you're starting to have somewhat of a business as usual, which goes back to the how to scale your business, right? Then you might want to think about adding structured processes. You might want to think about how to drive my business by more data, by metrics, things like that. Mm-hmm. And I think it's in general a no-brainer to do that. But the main issue question is, how far should you go to not get caught up in the processes and in the numbers itself without leaving the actual growth and strategy on the table? What's your experience with that?
Just to make sure I'm understanding the question, you're saying like how should you be prioritizing sort of flexibility versus process, like the rigidity of process and data versus, I don't know if I understood the question.
Not necessarily, more about, let's put it that way, when or how much should you introduce those things, right? Because you shouldn't, if you're a two-person company, start with project management and metrics right. and have everything documented.
Yep.
Doesn't make sense.
Yep. Yeah. So I think that it's a great question, and there's different approaches to it. I think when you're thinking about building something, the sales and marketing engine is the most important engine, right? For starters, because you're working with a clean slate, you don't have any clients, you don't have any revenue. If you don't have effective sales and marketing people, and chances are it's one person, right? When you're an early stage founder who knows enough about both functions to be dangerous and can go out to the market and generate awareness and generate new business. I think that's the most important piece. I think establishing community and doing content marketing like podcasts and, you know, making sure that you're leveraging social channels. If you're a product that can market to a community, like build a community. I think that is the biggest difference between Web 2 and Web 3 is the community, like the marketing, instead of being like top down funnel, you put out ads, leads come in, the sales team qualifies them, and then they go. Like, you can build a community around a product or service that you have, and it becomes a little bit of a marketing engine, like from the bottom up instead of top down. But, you know, and I think that finding those fervent followers who really love your brand and really love what you're building is something that will help you go to market more effectively. And then once you start getting some deals in and you start making some revenue, like getting somebody in operations who can look at, are you approaching the market the right way? Are you going after the right clients? Is the velocity of your outbound, you know, effective? Like, are you going after the right market? Do you have a really good understanding of the target audience and the target clients that you're going after? Because a lot of early stage founders just spray and pray, right? They're like, we're going to go after whoever will give us money. Understandable when you're early stage, but you have to, if you really want to establish a long-term approach, like, you have to be very focused on what your ideal customer is and be relentless about pursuing that customer. And that's where I think when you get to the point where you've got enough runway to last, you know, 3 to 6 months, you start looking for somebody that can look at the data and generate insights that can help you focus your attention really, really crystal clear. And then from there, like, project management and all that stuff, like, I think that comes later, right? That's when you've got plenty of clients and plenty of business and revenue, and you've got more business than you know what to do with, and that you have bodies to handle. that's when you turn towards project management and stuff like that.
Absolutely. I think as well, project management should be more out of necessity, right? Because
yes.
You need it.
100%.
And I think you're bloody well sure when you need it. So that's
yes.
Gonna be obvious.
Yeah. Usually you're, you know, if you wake up every morning and you're like, I feel like I just got buried in snow, you know, cause I've got so much to do. That's when you might need to look for some help.
Yeah.
And I would say too, like in the earlier stages of a business, you don't have to hire somebody full time. Like you could probably hire somebody that can spend a couple hours a week familiarizing themselves with your systems and with your data, and then just helping you, you know, every 2 weeks have a call where it's like, okay, here's how you're progressing, right? Like I think you're going to see a lot of that in the future going forward. Like there's always going to be people that have full-time jobs and prefer that, but there will probably be a lot of people who are perfectly happy to just have some income coming from different places, and they're willing to be consultants to help out on a part-time basis. And that seems like a good play for early stage companies.
Yeah, oftentimes it's also much less complicated, right? Because these consultants are oftentimes actual freelancers or something like that, and you don't need to, or at least in Austria you have a ton of overhead when it comes to hiring employees.
Mm.
And they're super expensive as well. So you usually pay 3 times as much to the government to what the employee actually gets.
Wow.
How
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
Also, 2/3 of the whole wage goes to the government or insurance companies and everything. And 1/3 is, yeah, it's crazy.
Wow. Yeah, that is crazy. Yeah, I mean, so yeah, definitely if that's the case, you want to work with freelancers. You don't want to bring on the hires until, you know, you've got enough cash to sustain it.
Yeah, well, usually you should always only hire, right?
That's true.
Yeah.
Very good point. Any business should do it that way, yeah.
Yeah, cool stuff. Awesome. One question that I think is, especially when it comes to startups, a really interesting one, is less directly related to scaling itself, but how to actually approach business, I would say. And founders usually approach one of two approaches: raising money, bootstrapping, right? What is your take on that? I know it's a big question.
My take is bootstrap until you cannot bootstrap any longer. And if you are able to bootstrap and you're really good at, like if you can bootstrap a business and you can grow it into a business with sustainable revenues and never take VC money, I think that's awesome. I think that venture capital is one of those things where it's a double-edged sword, right? Because you no longer have full autonomy. You are reporting to people that have invested in you and expect return. And their expectation is that you will return value to them quickly, right? Like very quickly. And you know, I think that is an additional pressure and an additional distraction that can be very, very difficult for founders. So if you are, you know, very passionate about what you're doing, you're good at sales, you're good at marketing, you are analytical and can think about sort of the data, you're flexible and adaptable, and you're just driven as all hell, and you have some good people around you that can help, I say bootstrap all day, any day, if you can avoid VC cash.
Absolutely makes sense, yeah. The less stakeholders are on the table, the easier.
Exactly.
So, awesome. Yeah, cool stuff. One last question from my side, and that's even one of those that I have sent to you, because I think that's also one of those either or scenarios. There is always this nuance of, well, let's start with marketing, brand, reach, sales, that kind of approach, versus have the product, versus have the service pipeline, like be ready, you know, whatever you're offering, and build that kind of a part of the business out first. I feel like I know it already, but please let me know.
I think the answer that's not as fun is it depends, right? Because if you're building a SaaS model and a product that, you know, you're trying to sell to somebody and you're expecting it to be functional outside of the box, and then they're going to write you a big check and they're going to work it, like, then, you know, in that scenario, yeah, focusing on the product is important. But I think you hear all these stories about founders where it's like, we went to a client and they agreed to sign up, and so we like pulled together this stuff and we built a whole new module on our product because that's what they asked for, and they had cash and we wanted the cash, so we did it. And I think there are examples of companies that start out with this idea of what they're building, and then the client comes in and says, you know, yeah, we'll sign up, but we need this functionality. So all of a sudden that functionality gets built in. Debatable if that's the right approach, right? Because we talked about being unwavering, right, in your vision for what you're building. But at the same time, you need money to keep the business going, and you need to be open to different ideas and listen to the market and hear what they're saying. So you do want to be agile and you do want to build, but you also don't want to get, it's easy to get distracted by that. Like, I've worked at companies where it's like, you know, you've got 15 clients, they're all asking for different things, but nobody's really prioritizing, okay, well, what is the actual thing that they're asking for that we haven't built yet? And how do we distill that? And I think one of the things that is very, very important whenever you're a founder is, or in an early stage startup, is look at the problems that you're facing from multiple angles, multiple perspectives. A lot of times it's very easy to be like, okay, I have a problem, I'm reacting to the problem. First solution that comes to my head is the one that I'm gonna go with. Sometimes that's right, but I always, the sort of wisdom of having done it a couple times has made it so that I typically will not come up with a strategy or decide what the plan is until I've looked at it from a couple different angles and spoken to a few different people and kind of got their input on it. Because, you know, many minds make light work. I think that's the saying, right? Like, that if you can talk to people about it and get their different perspectives, you'll have a better understanding of what you should do. So I think that that's kind of my thinking, is you have to go sales and marketing first and foremost, and then really listen. If you're focused on the target that you're going after, and you really listen to what they want, and they've at least bought into what you're selling enough to like see a product or pay you for it, then that should inform how you kind of evolve the business a little bit in the earliest stages. And then obviously once you get to like a level of maturity where you've got product market fit, you're not making significant shifts to the business or the product because a client says so, right? But in the early days, listen to what the clients want.
Awesome. Hey, thanks, mate, for that. Really, I learned a lot myself.
Awesome. I'm happy to hear that.
Do you maybe have, let's say, 3 key takeaways for people to remember from this cool session?
Yeah. So as I mentioned, approach each decision or problem from multiple angles. You know, even if you don't necessarily have a ton of people on your team, think about, okay, what's the pro of this approach? What's the con of this approach? And be really ruthless with how you judge something. Because that way you're looking at it from all angles and you can say that you made an informed decision. 2 is sort of hire people who are passionate about what you're doing, as passionate as you are, and are willing to put in the work to grow the business, right? Like we talked about at the top of the call, somebody that is willing to do whatever you need them to do to help get the business to where you want it to be. If you hire somebody that's very rigid or very focused on a specific type of function, that's better for later in the business. You want a generalist who is passionate as hell about what you're building and will work side by side with you to build that, right? And you know, that is important. And then the 3rd is just evangelize the hell out of what you're building, right? Nowadays, you know, there's no shortage of social media channels and digital outlets through which you can put out content. So it's important to make sure that people are aware of your brand and aware of your business and aware of what you're doing. They know the people behind the operation and the company. So those are my top 3, I think.
So you heard it, guys. Let's sign up for TikTok.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, you don't have to be on all of them, right? It comes down to like really understanding where are the eyeballs of your target audience or your target customer. And then double down on that and make sure that they're always seeing you in those channels.
Awesome. Love it. Hey, really, thanks again, mate. Was a pleasure. Really enjoyed the
Likewise.
discussion.
I'm happy to be here. Thank you so
Yeah.
much for having me. I appreciate it. And good luck with
Same,
everything.
same.
You know, keep doing what you're doing. It's awesome.
Thanks, buddy. Hey, thanks everyone for watching. See you soon.
WaveAct, the web-free software company that understands what you want.